Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 47 of iGel Weekly. If you're listening to this real time, which I'm sure many of you guys do, you'll know that we haven't posted 46 yet. So that's on my list of things to do later today. So we'll get lots of content out today. Unfortunately, I missed last week and I'm a slacker. I just didn't get it done. I've got Chris Feeney with me. Chris, how's it going?
It is going well, man. And if I know anything about you, you're not a slacker. You get about 12,000 things done more so in a day than probably most people I know. So I wouldn't beat yourself up too much on that.
Sometimes you got to fake it till you make it, or you just fall over.
Yeah, today was one of those days where I took it. I've been training for some racing stuff and ran 10 on Sunday morning, took a break yesterday, and this morning woke up. I was like, do I want to go out there? Do I want to go out there? And I was like, just go. Yeah, sometimes you just got to go, you know, so, but
that's good. That's good. You get, make yourself get up and do it, right?
Yeah.
And then you probably feel great once you get out there.
Yeah, I knew it was going to happen. It's getting that, you know, getting out of bed and putting the shoes on and just go. So
it's April 19th. Yesterday was the 18th, of course, and I'm in Chicago and it was snowing here. I was shocked.
Yeah. My daughter goes to college up there and she sent us a picture. It wasn't a ton of snow, I think, but still it's April.
So I'm going to tie this in. I'm going to tie this in to our blog that we're reviewing today. So, you know, we had this threat of 30 years of me being in this business that someday there might be a pandemic. Well, lo and behold, it happened, right? So that's honestly, that's the biggest gift for my work career ever, because all these, conversations about a possible pandemic and how are you going to work, you know, securely and remote came to fruition. You know, there's other things like a snowstorm in April, which shouldn't happen. And those things happen every year somewhere. You know, there's sickness and illness and family members to take care of. There's, you know, I need to go to the dentist at 11 o'clock today. I'm just going to work from home. Is that okay? And it used to be that was kind of a weird thing. You had to take a day off. Now it's kind of normal. Kids don't have snow days. They just have work remote days. The world has come to where we've always said it might go someday. And then the blog we have today is why your hybrid workforce, hybrid, they go in the office, they work from an executive suite somewhere, they work from their home office, I worked from the backseat of a car yesterday, I worked from a plane. Why your hybrid workforce needs a secure digital workspace. And the reason why, you know, Chris and I worked to choose this one, this is by Rex Sabio. I think I'm saying that right.
Abio, yep.
So thank you, Rex, for writing this great blog. We chose this because I swear this is, if I get a chance to have an open and honest conversation with a customer or even a vendor, but a customer on a daily basis, my question to them is, okay, you are where you are with your digital transformation. That's good. We're going to go to the next step. That's better. We're going to make that better. But what is your front door for that? What is your one and only secure, usable, user-friendly front door for that? And that is your digital workspace and your digital workspace strategy. And Chris, I promise, man, it's 99% of the people I ask what they're, after I ask about their digital transformation phase there, and I ask them about their digital workspace strategy, and nobody has a strategy. This article is going to kind of summarize why, you know, all the things that could be possible in your digital workspace strategy. You know, the one I get back more often than not is I got a VPN. I mean, we just gave everybody VPNs. We gave them a work computer. We bought a bunch of laptops. We sent them home with VPNs. And that is a strategy. Yes. It is the same strategy a company I worked for in the late 90s had. And that's not a digital workspace strategy. That's just a remote access strategy using traditional methods. It's imperative that everybody you talk to, and sometimes these are hard conversations for me because I'm taking a director, a CIO, and I'm challenging them saying, what is your digital workspace strategy? And if they come back with a VPN, like happens almost every day, I just have to say, well, I'm sorry, you can fire me right now. But that's just not good enough. And then a lot of times they'll come around to that not being good enough. Some of them that resonates with instantly, and some of them, you know, want to fight about it a little bit. But the world has to have a digital workspace strategy that is usable and secure. And we're going to talk about that today. So sorry to go on a rant, but every person that works at Zintegra, every customer we have, everybody we touch needs to have a digital workspace strategy that is how they access their digital transformation. And this article from Rex does a good job covering what it is and how to make it secure.
Yeah, no doubt. I think, and it's timely because I don't know about you, but just in the last few months, and certainly in the last month and a half, it has begun to feel more like normal in terms of being in front of people, seeing them without masks on and that type of thing. But yet it's not. We know things have changed, right? The question is, like, how much has it changed for your company or whatever? Are you now faced with the temptation to just go back to the way things were? Mm-hmm. And what I'm seeing is a lot of that just, they, you know, in some cases they've shut down offices, they've opened up new ones, or they've completely just rethought, I mean, just a lot of different things that you've probably seen as well. And I'm seeing a lot of vacancy signs out there too.
Oh yeah. I'm really worried about the commercial real estate bubble that's possibly going to bust. But for today, let's just talk about technology and digital workspaces, yeah, which is part of busting that bubble, because we just don't need to go to the office all the time anymore.
Yeah.
We never did. We never needed to, but you know, that's the way it worked. Now companies and people really, employees are driving the, I'm not going into that office every day, and forcing things to change.
Yeah. No, it's definitely interesting. And so there's a lot to unpack in this article. I think just in that first paragraph alone, the shifting generational perspective on the workplace.
Yeah, it's the Generation Z telling them they're going to have to go into an office. I mean, if I had a magic wand and plenty of money, I would be building apartment complexes with executive workspaces on the bottom of it, and then, you know, living residencies on the top of it. If I'm Warren Buffett, that's what I'd be building right now. I think that's the future of the Generation Z urban work, at least.
Yeah. Kind of like you're working right now from a remote location, I assume, right?
Well, those of us that have been in the industry for 5, 10, 20 years or more, we've been doing this forever. I remember my first job in this space. One of my first jobs where I went to work for Citrix, and it was 2 weeks before I got a laptop, but I was working because I was just remoting into a digital workspace. We didn't know to call it that at the time, but I was working remote from day one, no VPN, just using my, you know, home computer and securely, getting into the Citrix environment, get work done. There's some numbers in this article, this blog, the first paragraph. Looks like 83% of global workers prefer a hybrid situation. That's a big, almost, 100%. You know, as close as it probably could be, based on the way the survey was done. And 63% of high growth organizations have a work from anywhere. I'm going to pick on the word here, policy. A policy and a strategy aren't the same thing. My Fortune 500 company I worked for in the late 90s, early 2000s, they had a policy, which was give everybody a laptop and a VPN. That wasn't really a strategy. That was just just something to put on a piece of paper to say they had something in place in case they needed it, in case a pandemic or something happened.
Yeah, what's interesting about that global number is when the pandemic first came down, there's a lot of the working remotely from a cultural perspective. What we were seeing is our colleagues over in Europe, just culturally, they weren't used to that in the scale that it happened in. But now that everybody's had a chance to experience this, attitudes have shifted, and they would much prefer this hybrid option.
Which I find really interesting, because Europeans were higher adopters of technologies like Citrix than Americans. But at the same time, they lean towards going into the office, and maybe it's just the social aspect of, you know, working together is what they really miss, not the necessarily getting work done piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting, right? Because, I mean, we both had similar careers in terms of working for companies where, you know, as a field person, you are remote employee, always working from the home or somewhere else. You didn't have an office you went into. And when you did, it was always, you know, being able to see folks that you either saw them like this video wise or at conferences or whatever. And then, you know, but being close to the proximity, you might be able to get a lot of things, meetings or whatever, with people that you wouldn't normally see, and quickly go down the hall and have that brief conversation. You know, there's that type of benefit. But when that's not the norm anymore, you know, it's just an interesting, now we use Teams or whatever, are you there? You know, that it's just, and how rapidly a lot of this has shifted to the point where this is what I'm used to, going back to the office, where I'm not used to being in the office much anymore. Yeah. So let's
jump into helping our listeners understand what a digital workspace is. Rex calls out a few things. I'll add a few more, but seamless agility. I love that, because that means I can use applications, x86 applications, SaaS applications, the most widely used Windows or Microsoft application world, which is the Windows desktop, Windows, whether that's server-based or VDI, persistent, non-persistent, personal, not personal. And then he's got seamless agility, right? So that's the one I was just hitting on. The ability to log in as a single user using multi-factor and have single sign-on to all these different things. To me, that's the epitome of a digital workspace. That allows me to go left, go right, go straight, go backwards if I need to, access files, access, you know, applications, all these different things from one place where I go. And then once I get there, you know, I can then work. I would argue that, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, maybe certainly 30, maybe 20, your workspace was your desk, right? Your physical desk. And then that became the Windows, screen that you saw after you log in. That's why that thing's called the desktop, right? It's really not a desktop at all, but it's the place where you go to get started. That to me was your digital workspace, has been for many years and still is for a lot of people. Most people, it's still their digital workspace. And then you throw in something like, you know, what Microsoft was doing with an overlay of the browser onto the desktop at one point. I forget what they called that, but that became a digital workspace. evolution. And then now we have this thing where you log into a website or an app that has all your work content right there in one place, under a single user, with the idea of enhanced productivity. And then I'm getting the bullets here, enhanced security, all coming together to make a user a happier user and a better, more productive user, AKA digital workspace. And that's why Citrix and VMware and Okta and others, Microsoft, have been harping on this thing for so long. It is the future of technical getting work done, just like that desk or office used to be.
Yeah, and I think you see, for companies that had a lot of legacy type thing that was kind of right above that, how to get to those legacy technologies that were not, generally speaking, easily remotely accessible unless you had a VPN. You know, yeah. And now we're in a place where you can get to a lot of those things and more so by working with some of these vendors where it's much more accessible and secure. So,
well, I think we talked about it a while ago. The VPN was the, I don't have a pathway to a digital workspace. I just have to get something done digitally. And I give the VPN, which, you know, maybe that it hits productivity because now you can work from wherever. But man, what did it possibly do to impact the seamless piece and the centralized security protection? You basically took security and put it in the hands of the network guys and said, okay, when this person comes in remotely, make sure they can only get to certain things. Well, I'm sorry, how do I know what things they're supposed to get to? Well, I'll tell you. Well, you forgot to tell me. And they say, you know, there's, you know, these holes that are there that if I'm a security guy at an organization using VPNs to access my environment from computers, whether it's personal or corporate owned, I don't know how you sleep at night.
Yeah. No, I mean, I was just thinking, I have one task at the moment that I need VPN for. That's it, as far as Agile goes. And I think it's sort of a legacy thing. Maybe at some point I won't need to use the VPN for it, but it's, if I want to go into the backend side of our license portal and either look for something or generate some eval licenses or something, I have that ability, but I have to be on VPN to do it. Outside of that, that's it. I mean, I guess at some point I won't need it anymore, but that's really the only thing. Well,
you're highlighting something that is common on our side of the fence. When you're some type of sysadmin, which, you know, I'm CEO of Zintegra, I still have a couple things I need to do in my lab, things that a VPN could be used for. But even that, I don't use anymore. I have other remote technologies that are part of my digital workspace. So Patrick joined us. Patrick, how's it going?
Hey, good morning, guys. Doing well. Better late than never, I guess. You know, glad I could make it. Doing well.
Yeah, that's how was right. Your commute? Is that the
Yeah, man. It's just the never-ending issue of being double booked at times, you know. So it's anyway.
Yeah, that's right. So Patrick, what you've jumped into is we're reviewing a blog that's really harping on something I talk about every day, and I know you talk about as well. And that is the need for customers to have a strategy, not a policy. We actually called out the differences a while ago, a strategy around how they grant access to their current phase of digital transformation. And that is and should be a digital workspace. If it's a VPN or just access to a VDI or something like that, the VDI I'll take, right? I mean, that's a digital workspace strategy, a VDI or a virtual desktop or even published apps. But there's so much more capability out there. And we've covered so far the idea of making it seamless and enhanced productivity so users like it while still adding extra layers of security that they don't even know what's happening, like single sign-on, multi-factor, and then you know narrowing the gap of what they have access to. So the next section, and Patrick, we'll let you jump right in. There's four bullets here that talk about, you know, why do hybrid teams need digital workspaces? You want to cover these for us?
Sure. So just reading through these now.
I'll put you on the spot. Sorry about that. I'll hit the first one. Finding workspaces that balance productivity with security is probably the most important one. You know, why is that important that people that we as systems guys, architects, understanding that productivity balanced with security has to be top of mind?
Yeah, you know, I think we have this conversation kind of often, right? It's that never ending battle between the two, you know, security and end user experience. You know, you can make something as secure as you want. You can lock it down to the point of you're almost zero risk of ever getting breached, but your end users aren't going to want to use it, right? They're not going to be able to be productive in that scenario. I mean, that's such a huge balance, and it's always going to be changing, right? You know, I mean, every organization I've been part of, you know, hey, security comes in, there's a, you know, some sort of vulnerability, they got to put in a fix. It might decrease the end user experience a little bit. It might make the user feel like they're not as productive. You know, so there's, you know, at that point, there's got to be a workaround. You got to work with the different solutions to try to make that experience better for the user. So,
but Patrick, would you say that in today's modern world, the idea of a digital workspace that creates this single identity with single sign-on capabilities, you are making it digital workspaces that's made it where you can make it more secure, but yet more user-friendly all at the same time? It's the first time in my career I've ever seen that happen.
Yeah, I mean, this is great. To your point, right? I mean, it is pretty great. Like the solutions that are out there now, you know, having, you know, that identity access management, you know, apps in the cloud, you access them through a browser, wherever you're getting to them. Yeah, I mean, for sure. There really is, it's kind of amazing when you think about what Azure is doing, companies like Okta, you know, to kind of give you that, you know, deliver that digital workspace, Citrix. I mean, there's you know, there's so many ways to access that now that weren't there 5, 6, 7 years ago, right?
Well, I want to hit on that real quick. Chris, if I were to say to you that based on what I know about the industry, you've got Okta that brings a bunch of different technologies together. You got Citrix that has their technology, but also allows you to bring other technologies into their digital workspace. You have, and Citrix would have been Citrix Workspace. And then you have VMware Workspace ONE. I see those as the only three that really try to do something, but then try to bring in every other entity they can into that digital workspace, one single place to log in, access everything in your organization. Am I short-sighted in seeing those three as the three that actually bring it all together? Are there others that I'm missing?
I think there's others. I mean, if we're looking at, like, if we want to draw up like the Gartner matrix or something, I think there's probably others out there, but as far as advanced to where things are, those three are definitely at the top. I would say, not that I've seen enough of this, but perhaps Amazon Workspace is trying to pull that together. But I think if they're looking at building a digital workspace and they're not including apps and or desktops, whatever, you know, right out of the gate, like from ground zero on up,
And to double click on your word apps there, that's both, you know, web-based SaaS apps as well as legacy x86 apps. And that's where the, you know, the Citrixes and the VMware shine, because that's what they've done all this time. And others can bring in, you know, your SaaS apps, but it's those legacy x86, either desktops or, you know, fat, what we call fat client server applications. Those are the ones that, you know, Citrix or maybe Microsoft at a minimum bring in. That make a holistic digital workspace where you go, okay, I log into every single application and use case here, except for that one, like you kind of pointed out a while ago. Why can't I just, you know, if I don't have a Citrix or a VMware or an Okta, bring in one of those two into the mix, that's when I can take any x86 and make it available as a remote executing app without having to do the dreaded, like you called out a while ago, the VPN thing.
Yeah.
I think Okta too specifically. I mean, they're doing some really cool stuff. I had one customer in the past. They were leveraging Okta. It was that one, to your point, Andy, that one place where the end user, they log in and they had VMware, you know, their VMware VDI environment was accessible, their Citrix apps were accessible, and just all in one pane. It was really, you know, really seamless. And of course you have all the identity management and dual factor built into it. So just it really is kind of amazing what, you know, what they're doing and how they're leading, in my opinion, leading in that space.
I mean, they don't have a legacy that they have to bring forward, but they can bring forward the other legacies, which is a Citrix or a VMware being middleware to get you to what we're really talking about is a Microsoft legacy app.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
On the peripheral, I've been trying to get a sense of what Okta's been doing. But you're right. I mean, they were cloud first, essentially, built from the ground up, unlike a 30-year-old company like Citrix or Microsoft, where a lot of the legacy stuff might still be out there, but certainly a lot's been ported to the cloud. Agile's in the same boat. I mean, we're a 20-year-old company, and some of the stuff we have as far as the management pieces, certainly you can put them in the cloud, but a lot of that, you know, has been built on on-prem type things, moving towards a more digital type cloud accessible experience.
Well, here's the reality of that comment, right? I talk to customers that have this very progressive view of what a digital workspace is, but they almost always have, unless they're a fairly young company, they always have this legacy application that has complexity. I was with one yesterday where, you know, they've got Outlook, fat client Outlook plugins to their main application that they use for indexing all their legacy documents, all their documents, not even legacy, their current documents too. And they just like, okay, I want this beautiful digital workspace thing, and I want this best of breed SaaS stuff, but I've got this one application that makes us go right back in the gutter and have to deal with that. And that's when a Citrix or a VMware comes in and is the only way to access that thing through whatever, you know, front end workspace there is. All right, so I think we covered number two, mitigating the complexities of using various tools. If we can just simplify that into one tool that everything just shows up as an icon and you click that icon and something magical happens, and the next thing you know, you see the application. The last two bullets, one is crises, events, pandemic. The other is responding to the growing number of cybersecurity threats. It's simple to say, but very effective to say on that last bullet at this point that as it stands today, the simplification of a digital workspace and remoting protocols is not the target of your cybersecurity threats. You're somewhat mitigating the risk just by adopting something that's newer and progressive, but there's lots of ways through analytics and single sign-on and multi-factor to make those and putting it behind a firewall somewhere and opening just a couple ports to access it, that you're making massive strides in security. Take it and access it from a Linux endpoint like an IGL unit, and all of a sudden your security attack vector just went really, really small. And you've got the ability to have a sleep at night is what I would say. People that are giving a VPN out to somebody to run on their home computer or the business computer, they treat like their home computer. I don't know how systems admins sleep if they're doing that.
You know, I think number three and four, right there, recovering from the, obviously went through this pandemic and, a lot of customers had to kind of make a decision on the fly. Do you want to move more into that you know, virtual desktop, you know, whether it's desktop as a service or VDI model, or do you want to send customers home with a laptop, you know, and a VPN? And I think, you know, that kind of, it exposed a lot of the like strategies that we all had, right? All of our different companies, how we were doing things. You know, I think that, you know, right now is a great time to really kind of reassess, right? Where do we not succeed in certain areas when we sent people home? You know, having that, you know, something like an Okta, something like, you know, leveraging Citrix workspace, whatever your digital workspace solution is, you know, I think something like iGel, it needs to be part of that conversation right in there, because you, like, to Andy, to your point, if another event happens tomorrow, we're sending everybody home, what are people accessing this from? Are they accessing it from an old slow computer, you know, at home, or, you know, do you know what's on that computer? Do you, you know,
so Patrick, put a best guess on this, but I'll ask you guys both this question. Your best guess on the number of the percentage, not number, but the percentage of users that during the pandemic were giving a VPN piece of software, maybe some type of multi-factor to go with it, and told to put that on their home computer and use it. Give me your best guess number. What do you think that was?
Man, I would say it was, of all companies, it was probably the majority. I would say it was probably anywhere from, I would say 60%, somewhere around there.
So not a work computer where they gave them a work computer and sent them home, but an actual, put this software on your home computer. Yeah. Just give me your best guess.
Yeah. Well, so in that scenario, I would say it was less. I would say maybe 25-30%.
25. Chris, what do you think?
I'm going to go higher. I'm going to go at least 50%. I think companies would know if they probably had enough and a equipment to support more users plus licenses for traditional folks that were not remotely coming in on a regular basis. Do you actually know what it was, Andy?
So Chris, just real quick, you've gotten garbly several times on the call. I thought it was just me, but Patrick sounds fine, so it must be someone you're in.
Digital workspace. I'm testing out these wireless Bluetooth headsets. So
yep. So here's the answer to your question. I don't know the number, but if it was anything over zero, it was too much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that, especially a home computer, like VPNing from a home computer, that's just Pandora's box, right?
Well, that was my specific question. Like, okay. And then the other question would be, how many people got a company computer where they had admin rights or, you know, no patching strategy and got a VPN? That's not as bad, but it's still pretty daggum bad. Any of it's bad, right? We just, the idea of saying, here's a little piece of software that's going to backdoor you into my network, and we're going to do the best we can to box you in, but we only know what we know. It's just a really bad idea.
Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, with COVID, it happened so fast, right? I remember I was on vacation when the state of emergency was declared, and I was literally walking in the door, had a customer say they had to make a decision that day. Mm-hmm. Are we going to go with deploying iGel everywhere managed by the iGel Cloud Gateway? Are we sending people home with, you know, laptops that were repurposed with Windows and a VPN? And this specific customer went that route. I think now they regret it. You know, but now's a perfect time to take a look back and say, all right, what did we do wrong? How do we prepare for the next wave? Right.
Well, and that's why this blog exists, right? Now is the time to, if you did it wrong, and, you know, we can argue whether you did it wrong. Most customers, when they start to tell me about their VPN strategy they used during the pandemic, most of them will kind of hang their head when they start to talk about it. And I'm like, it's okay. I'm here to help you. Most of them know that you can't keep doing that. But a few of them I've seen go, yeah, the pandemic's over. I'm not worried about it anymore. I'm like, oh, the next thing is coming. You know, that person's going to work from home. That, you know, that need to be flexible is going to be there. You know, according to this article, 80-some% of the future workers are going to demand it. We have to adopt a digital workspace strategy of some type, even if it's just a login, launch your virtual desktop, something. It can't be deploy VPNs everywhere.
Fool me once, shame on me. Shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Right. I think Michael Scott had a different take on that saying, but yeah, it's, if you still have that mindset, like, oh, it's over. I mean, man, I don't know. I don't know what it's going to take to get you to that point to reassess your scenario.
Yeah. In today's world with media and the shock of value of any type of possible pandemic type conversation, just being something that sells commercials, it'll never be over again. Had the Spanish flu of the early 1900s happened during today, we'd still be talking about Spanish flu every other season or every season, every change in the season, because it would be an opportunity for the media to scare us into watching their shows and commercials. And sorry, maybe a little political there, but my point is the world's never going to let us forget it. I see that as positive for what we do, because it's easy to walk in and say, okay, what is your digital workspace strategy? You can't tell me that you don't have one, because the world says you got to have one. Your employees, your the media, everybody says you got to have one. What is yours? Okay. Chris, digital workspace and security, specifically cybersecurity. I've got three paragraphs here. When they say greater flexibility while being more secure, what do they mean?
Well, I think the flexibility would certainly be number one, where you're able to access this from. And I think, the technology has advanced so much to the point where, if you're in this zero trust kind of architecture, which I don't think is specifically called out in this article, but you have the ability to, implement some of those extreme measures, more common measures to lock down the ability to get into that environment, first of all, so you know who that person is coming from. And you have to be able to establish some kind of trust. But also, we saw a lot of M&A activity. And if you can, one scenario I can think of is, say, if you take over a company and on day one, you want to switch them into a digital workspace, and you have that ready to go, whether you spin it up rather quickly on the fly, quickly scale, or you add them into an existing environment, the fact that you can say that you have it and you have a strategy, say, yeah, we can actually go acquire this company, and on day one, they can be working out of our digital workspace. Very similar to what your story was earlier about. You started at Citrix and you didn't have a laptop yet, or you were just remoting into whatever they were making available so you could do your job on day one. So, but I think that that flexibility is certainly... it just allows you to rethink. All right, I don't have to worry about this on-prem stuff as much. I'm going to just float all that up, and now I can. That gives me much more flexibility to handle changes in the market, opportunities that pop up. Company A is in trouble. Wait, they used to be a competitor. Maybe there's something we can do with them. Maybe we can acquire them and be better together. Something like that, right?
Yeah. So most of this conversation has been around appeasing the modern day worker who wants a hybrid work model. At the same time, there's business initiatives that can be satisfied and helped mergers and acquisitions. A quick example, we got a customer we work with, a bank that will actually use technologies like a Citrix, like a VMware, to acquire a new bank. They'll onboard them for a few weeks, and then they'll go out. This is the craziest thing I've ever heard. They go back and they deploy their legacy solution after they've onboarded them for a couple of weeks and got them into their system, and then they'll go back and deploy their legacy solutions. I have to think that they're rethinking that as they know that a pandemic could possibly happen, and all those users that they brought into a digital workspace and then removed from a digital workspace. Now all of a sudden they've got to have them in a digital workspace, for their hybrid work model. But really this article is calling out in this paragraph. It's not just making people happy. It's also good for business. If we can enable the customer I met with yesterday, I said, yeah, we're here, we're in Chicago, we're Indiana. But we're thinking about buying somebody out west. I'm like, oh, all of a sudden conversation just became very interesting on what we can provide them that might help them do that at scale.
One last thing on this thing is to this flexibility, our UD Pocket is a key thing, right? We can just on day one go in, plug those things into existing devices that are compatible for it, and boot up to that, and there you provide a new workspace from day one, going back later on and reassessing if you repurpose those or just replace them with other things, but you're providing almost immediately that accessible and manageable endpoint.
Yeah. Patrick, the next call out here is on increased compatibility. And I think they actually call out the digital workspace, maybe desktop as a service specifically, as and I use it all the time, as the catch-all, right? Yesterday's meeting, there was this one use case where it was developers and they had to have the access and admin rights, and they had an access database that needed to be theirs, and they couldn't share it on a multi-user environment. All of a sudden, you know, desktop as a option as part of a digital workspace strategy came to the forefront. What, when they call out the compatibility of this blog and this paragraph, can you help summarize that for us?
Yeah, and I'm trying to think how I'm understanding it, you know, because they're mentioning device agnosticism. They're mentioning tablets, smartphones. So if I'm understanding this correctly, I think what you're saying is, hey, you know, when you go to that digital workspace model, you can kind of connect from any, you know, it opens up the door. If you want to connect from your phone, great. You want to connect from your tablet, great. I mean, obviously, you want to have some things in place there, like multi-factor, to make sure you trust who's coming in. But you know, you're running effectively Windows or some legacy application, and delivering it onto, you know, a device that's not a Windows device. You know, so you increase the compatibility of the devices. Oh, I think we lost Andy there for a second. But you increase the you know, amount of devices you're connecting from and make them compatible with the workflow that your customers are using, or your end users are using, I should say. And Andy, I don't know if you caught any of that.
Well, I'm certain that you covered it, but still talking about increase that. And that, my friends, is the biggest wild card in all this. I'm working from a hotel now. I was on a plane yesterday. Having a digital workspace strategy that also includes what do I do when my users are offline, which becomes less and less, or balancing that between the value of a digital workspace, the security that goes along with it, the enablement of the user, and, you know, connectivity. That's the biggest challenge in all this, is how you make a decision that allows you to get things done, be secure, but also understand the dynamics of network connectivity.
On that last point, I think one of the things that we really haven't touched base on too much is accessing that digital workspace, whether it's apps or a desktop, and like limited bandwidth, like how much bandwidth do you actually need to be able to have a good user experience, moving a mouse, doing some typing on a whatever it might be. I think it's definitely gotten better. The protocols have gotten better. The speed has gotten better. To me, like, it's always a big question if I am trying to demo something on a trade show floor with wireless stuff, this or limited bandwidth type that, and being surprised at, you know, with the 5 megabit, you know, extremely expensive internet connection that we get, if you hard to believe it's not 500 megabits, but less than that, much less. It still actually demos pretty well. You know, yeah. So now extrapolate that to I'm on a plane somewhere 30,000 feet or higher in the sky, and I'm able to pull up this or a virtual desktop or whatever, and it's actually not a terrible user experience, you know, just getting stuff done.
And that's the key, right? SaaS apps are using HTML, which has, you know, gotten HTTP, which has gotten good at high latency stuff. Citrix VMware and Microsoft with UDP as their part of their protocol stack. All that's gotten so much better. I mean, look, we all started. I know I did. And I assume you guys started somewhere along the same line on dial-up modems with 15K connections. And it wasn't great, but it worked. The big challenge is what I just experienced, which is losing the network. And even that's gotten infinitely better. I used to would have never done this from a hotel. Now I do it almost every week from a hotel. I work using a virtual desktop from a hotel. That part of the world is getting better around us. And that's probably the number one enabler of all this, is that our connectivity has gotten to the point where it's good enough most of the time that we can have a strategy like a digital workspace, and we just have to realize there are moments where it might come back to bite us, but the gains are worth the losses when that happens.
Yeah. And I mean, this actually came up the other day in a conversation. Providing this type of workspace to your users, is it increasing your help desk calls, or is it good enough, just good enough, or whatever, that they accept the fact that it may not, you know, maybe you deal with issues like you just had a hiccup in the internet or something, whatever, solar winds comes blowing through, whatever it might be, right? Something happens. Is adopting this type of strategy, are you saying, all right, well, I'm going to now put more budget towards help desk calls because I know they're coming, you know, or is it, you know, it actually is going to help me out there too?
Well, I think what we found is a tipping point where it used to be a hindrance. Now there's so many benefits of doing it. It's a tipping point where it's worth it, even though we know we're going to get that one person who has a converted office that used to be a back porch. Then we have to jump into the system and say, look, I can see through analytics, you've got a really bad connection at your house, but the rest of it's working great. And then you can show them and prove to them that it's an issue on their end and they've got to fix their home office scenario. Because look, you come to the office 3 days a week, you never have problems when you're here. However, when you're home, you always have problems. We had the reverse a couple weeks ago at Zintegra. We had an issue in the office. It kept coming up over and over again. And what we found is our switch port was set incorrectly, and that was impacting our digital workspace experience. Because when you go from home, work from home, never had issues. You came into the office and, you know, had issues every time.
Yeah.
No, I like this last one here, support specialist. So again, it came up yesterday. What about that use case where I've got these remote workers that need admin rights and they're doing development work? That's always been in the mix. Digital workspace is just a way to get them into that. And it's a heck of a lot better than having to hire a local developer, maybe not the right developer. But there's these one-off use cases because of the legacy of this stuff, especially a Citrix or a VMware. The legacy of being able to give somebody a fully functioning physical desktop, if you want. I've got one customer who's got 250 physical desktops running in a data center where the users have admin rights and they treat it like it's their own desktop. They just remotely access it. That stuff's there. We don't want to give it that way, but it's there and can be part of a digital workspace strategy. And it's not wrong. It's better than giving them VPN access into their from their computer into the, you know, the place where the crown jewels are.
Yeah, that's a great. So I actually am dealing with this right now. I've identified a need for somebody with a special skill set that can help us with a special project, and they would be a contractor to start, potentially more than that later, but to start in a contract position. And I was thinking through, okay, well, here's what they would need to do their job. It's going to require like access to Office, for example, mm-hmm. you know, Teams, things like that. But I was thinking through that scenario already in my head, but the fact that you have adopted and we have those tools, I know you guys do too. It does give you kind of tying back to that flexibility to be able to, you know, hey, this guy just came available for 6 months or whatever. Let's go ahead and knock it out, bring him in or whatever, and work on this initiative.
So Patrick, what would you say to this comment? If you had a mature, secure digital workspace and somebody showed up like Chris is talking about, and they said they could start tomorrow, is it a possibility they could get started tomorrow and technology wouldn't be a hindrance?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think absolutely. If you have the right configuration on the back end. I had one customer in the past. They would spin up, you know, thousands of contractors certain times of year, right? So, and they were leveraging on the back end Amazon Workspaces. So in their world, they could deliver, you know, here's a desktop, here's all your tools you need. And from their standpoint, it was great because they could scale up in the busy season. And then once those contractors were kind of done their 3 month whatever jobs, they scaled that environment right back down. But it was just for them, it was a matter of turning it on and off, right? Allowing the contractor to access it and then taking it back when they were finished. So, yeah, I think if you have a mature solution in place, I mean, compared to the way things we used to, you know, or had to work, you know, previously, you know, you're sending them a device or, you know, I mean, that's you're saving tons of time for every one of those contractors, possibly weeks or months.
Well, I love what you said there. I talked about turning them on rather quickly and securely. You talked about turning them off quickly and securely. That's probably just as important at the end of whatever the contract is. And we haven't talked at all about that, but that's a huge element of digital workspace. One place for them to access it makes it easy and secure. It also makes it easy and secure for you to turn them off.
Sure. I think, you know, Chris probably had these conversations too. I mean, when you're talking about people with development and in other countries, you know, different third world countries where labor, you know, it comes down to the price of labor there. You know, there's a lot of turnover, tons of turnover. So to be able to turn them off and not have to give them a device that they, a lot of times our customers have told us, hey, we don't get the devices back. We actually lose quite a bit of money on people walking with those devices. So yeah. Send them something like a UDPocket and they access your Citrix or Amazon or whatever environment. To be able to turn them off and not lose money on that is huge.
Yep. Another angle of security at digital workspace we haven't brought up is the ability to turn on analytics where either probably not likely that we're individually watching them, but we've got systems in place watching them all the time. We had a situation as Integra where, you know, somebody went in after they were in the process of being let go. We didn't turn them off right away. They wanted to have some time to get stuff taken care of. And they literally started deleting a whole bunch of files. We saw that happening. We got alerted to it and turned them off. You know, we told them, say, hey, why are you doing this? They said, they said, why'd you turn me off? I'm like, we turned you off because you're deleting a bunch of files. Like, oh, I didn't need to be doing that. And they surely did. But it was the analytics that went along with a digital workspace that gave us yet another aspect of security that, you know, we haven't talked about here, but is the more intelligent piece of all this, and something that once you move to a digital workspace, you get to take advantage of.
Yeah. And, you know, on the analytics point, and it's probably worth plugging this, Andy, but, you know, you were talking about the work from home user having the issues. I mean, I immediately thought of the Liquidware solution and how, you know, that ties into iGel. And, you know, let's say that home user had issues or they were doing something they shouldn't. You can have something automatically send a message that ties back to ServiceNow. You know, so if you had, you know, help desk user, you know, logging in, the user calls in, they're already seeing everything, right? So, I mean, there's so many things you can do with that, whether it's from your scenario, you know, where somebody's doing something they shouldn't, or, hey, my network's not working. Well, I already see that. I already have that visibility, you know,
Performance or security analytics become a real piece of the equation when there's a digital workspace in place. And that, you know, could be the application security or performance, could be the network, could be the endpoint. So on that note, Chris, in one or so statement, where does iGel fit in? This is an iGel blog talking about digital workspace. Obviously, it's relevant for iGel. How does iGel fit into this discussion?
Well, the thought that comes to mind is like a big circle, right? The operating system in that respect, being able to connect you into and support all the other things that are around this digital workspace ecosystem. And having that sort of as your central spot, because A, you can totally manage the OS by itself and then provide access to whatever you need, whether it's, you know, some of the things we talked about, we're always getting into this scenario, or we got something new we're bringing online. So I think I just sort of fits right into that, because at the end of the day, the user has to walk up and start typing and using their mouse on something. What do you want that to be?
Yep.
And we would certainly love it if it was iGel because of all the things that we offer to help with that.
Patrick, same question. If you had to take this digital workspace conversation, which Chris highlighted being the center of it, where does iGel fit into that conversation?
You know, if I break it down into a few categories, right? Security, flexibility, you know, accessibility, all the things we're talking about, that's what iGel does, right? So, you know, on the security piece, obviously it's a read-only OS. So you're securing that endpoint. You know, this also ties into flexibility, but hey, if you have that work from like COVID type situation where you have to send everybody home, hey, send them home with a UD Pocket or repurpose some old equipment that you were going to get rid of anyway. It's secure and it's purpose built to connect to your digital workspace. So, you know, basically I think iGel in my mind is the mechanism on the endpoint to basically have an access strategy to your digital workspace. You know, it's secure, it's flexible, and, you know, it's going to give people and administrators the ability to roll it out quickly and know what they're connecting from. Know from a security standpoint, no, it's not some device with malware and all kinds of stuff. It's secure, but it's easy to manage. And, you know, it's kind of built for this exact type of workflow, purpose-built to, and it's connected to these digital workspaces.
Yep. It was probably called a published or virtual app or virtual desktop at the time, but iGel was built to do this. Like, why take this beautiful centralized system and turn around and access it from something that you're not sure whether it's secure or not? Why don't you access it with something, like Chris said, you got to access it with something. Why not access it with something that is highly likely to be secure, you know, trust it, but verify. It's a huge step in protecting the front door, is to make sure you don't allow bad things in to start with, but then also protect it. Yeah. All right, guys, I think we ran way over. I'm sorry, but this has been a good conversation. I hope hope everybody in my company and my team listens to it. There's a lot to take away from this. You know, iGEL and how it accesses a digital workspace and how it applies to our customers and our workloads is what we need to be talking about every day. And, you know, again, I'll make the comment, Patrick, I don't know if you were on when I said a while ago, every person I talk to needs to tell me they have a digital workspace strategy and articulate what it is, you know, and fairly succinctly. And most people can't, and that's okay. That's what we're here for. Chris, Patrick, thanks. Appreciate you jumping on as always.
We'll do thank you, Andy. Definitely.
Andy, thanks for having us.
You guys have a good one. Bye.
See you. Thanks.
Bye. Bye-bye.